Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. It's February 26, 2020. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch. ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right, so the first order of business is to promote the 2020 Know Your Farmer Fair. Unfortunately, the folks that organized it weren't able to make it here this year, but they were going to come on the 12th, but I was sick. So, and I didn't even want to come on campus because I was already sick and the campus was covered in flu. It may still be covered in flu for all I know. I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't good. So I didn't come and I canceled that appearance and then they weren't able to make it last week or this week. So I'm just going to promote the Know Your Farmer Fair now myself.
There you go.
So it's Saturday, February 29th, and it's at the Wyndham Town Hall Auditorium, which is at 979 Main Street in Willimantic. It's from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. And there's a snow day the following Sunday, March 1st, and there is no charge. I don't think we're going to need the snow day. The weather forecast is like high of mid-30s and sunny. So I think it's going to be Saturday, February 29th. The fair is in its fifth year and is an opportunity for farmers to connect with residents and explain what and how they grow so residents can build a relationship with their local farming community. We found that the most loyal customers are the ones who have gotten to know their farmers and built a friendship. We want the greater community to feel that type of friendship and help the farmers build this loyal farming. There's a farmer's market there with plenty of vegetables, meat, eggs, milk, honey, maple syrup, and jams and jellies of all kinds direct from the farm. There will be a seed-saving table helping people with their gardening questions and getting a jump on the spring planting. This year, with the support of their sponsors, they'll be raffling off a full-season half CSA share. To enter, you can come to the event, take a photo of you with your farmer, and post to your social media, Facebook or Instagram. You tag your hashtag Know Your Farmer Fair and your farmer to be entered. This is a family-friendly event, and they encourage kids to come and chat with the farmers to learn about where their food comes from. Oh boy, I can't tell you how many kids come in and, you know, their parents bring them to me for all kinds of reasons. And then I find out that the kids don't eat vegetables. They like fruit, but they don't like vegetables. Sometimes they don't like fruit either. And they basically eat the white diet. And the white diet is basically milk, cheese, bread, noodles, and that's it. And so one of the things that I encourage parents to do is to help with food preparation. With little kids, it's often a good idea to give them little bite-sized pieces of crunchy vegetables. They don't always like cooked vegetables, but they like little bite-sized crunchy vegetables.
Crunchy things.
Yeah.
Like carrots and stuff.
Yeah, carrots, radishes, celery, cucumbers. And you can have those pre-cut in the refrigerator. And if you're worried about them going off, you can squeeze a little bit of lemon or lime on them, and then they'll last longer because of the antioxidants. But anyway, one of the ways to get your kids into doing produce is to have them make it accessible to them, have them help with the shopping, have them help with the food preparation, and a big thing is have them grow it themselves. Ooh. So if you garden with the kids, the kids are going to see where their food comes from. They're going to get excited about the food growing and know that they grew it. And then they're going to want to, then they'll be more interested in eating it once it's grown, when it comes from start to finish. And having said that, we want to talk about Jaron Geyer and the Thread City Family Garden. So this is from Grow Wyndham. The new garden, which was established in 2016, grows fruits, vegetables, and edible fungi for the Wyndham community. Through a variety of methods, some experimental and some time-tested, the Wyndham Youth Corps, Grow Wyndham, and many volunteers all provide opportunities for the community to prep, plant, and take root. Jaron Geyer, who is the garden coordinator, facilitates the participation of groups in local schools, universities, places of worship, organizations, and individuals in order to maximize networking and the community of urban farming practice. The food produced at the Thread City Family Garden benefits many in the area, donated to the Covenant Soup Kitchen, sold to local vendors and value-added businesses, and used by the Wyndham Youth Corps in their sofrito and hot sauce production. How cool is that?
That's cool. Hey, you know what else is cool?
No.
Have you ever been to the Wyndham Town Hall Auditorium?
You know, I don't know that I have.
It's really cool.
Oh!
It's in like the third, it's on the third floor or something like that of the building. And it's just, you know, that building in itself is a very old, historic, really interesting building.
Yeah.
But it's this big, like a theater. Upstairs.
Oh,
it's very cool. It's very cool.
That.
It's not like a theater with seats, but it's got a big stage and it's and it's huge, tall ceilings. Very, very cool place. Very, very cool.
Interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. That's kind of cool.
Right. Mm. So I'll try to be there. I may be running around, but I'll try to be there.
I have a question. Yeah. Is Brian O'Hara going to be there?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Because we should bring him. We should bring him for a future show also with his new book.
Right.
Which is really
exciting.
Yeah,
that is so exciting that he wrote a book. Yeah,
really exciting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope to see him soon. And there'll be a Storrs Farmers Market, I believe, not this weekend, but next weekend.
Okay.
On the 7th, is that right? Is it, let me think, 3, 4, 5, 6, no, 9th. No, the 7th. On Saturday, March 7th, will be the next Storrs Farmers Market. So hopefully he'll be there. That's exciting. All right. So people are concerned about the coronavirus. And I was asked, somebody asked if I got an email asking, requesting that I speak about the coronavirus. So I'll talk a little bit more about the coronavirus. People are nervous about it because the news reports are getting more dire.
They are. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, they're talking about
there's news reports, there's political reports, there's all sorts of strange things going on about it. And it's, you know, obviously in what I talk about, it certainly has delayed a lot of things that might be coming into this country from Asia.
That's right. So this coronavirus, there are lots of, as I said before, there's a lot of coronaviruses. They're called coronavirus because if you look at the virus under a microscope, it has a little crown around it. And this is a specific coronavirus. There are many coronaviruses, and you've probably had one, and it gave you a cold or a cough. But so those coronaviruses you get through. This one is novel, so people haven't seen it. So people are getting sicker from it, and there's concerns that it will be spreading. And they're doing things like canceling flights to various areas, canceling flights to Italy is another place now. There was an exchange program in Florence, Italy, that they've canceled, and they brought the students back from there. You know, they're getting more concerned that there's going to be more incidences of this coronavirus in the United States. So this coronavirus, this specific coronavirus, they're calling it 2019 hyphen little n capital COV. And so it's a specific coronavirus. And there are lots of clinical trials to treat it. It's another name for it is the SARS that causes an acute respiratory syndrome. And there are trials that are going on in China, also Japan, Thailand, and England. And it's killed over 2,000 people in the world and infected more than 70,000 in China, according to the World Health Organization, with estimates of 200,000 infections based on computer modeling. And there's a big trial underway in Shanghai where doctors are taking blood plasma from patients who are sickened by the virus and recovered and infusing it into patients who still are. So you're giving them serum from other people who have antibodies to it to fight the illness. It's an interesting way to treat it. In Japan, doctors are going to use HIV antiretroviral drugs to treat patients with this virus. And so they're actually using drugs to fight this because they're just afraid that people can't fight it off on their own. And they're also being tested alongside thousand-year-old traditional treatments such as Chinese herbal medicine There's a medicine called Shuang Wang Lian, which contains extracts from Lian Chao, which is a Forsythia species. It's not necessarily the Forsythia that you see growing on the side of the road, but it's a Forsythia species. It's Chinese, used in Chinese medicine. The World Health Organization is closely monitoring trials and assisting with developing protocols so the results of different experiments can be compared. Standards are being set for placebo treatment, checking onto a person's decline, and that they really want to get the clinical trials straight. Recruiting eligible patients into this clinical trials may not be as easy as drug makers had anticipated. And a clinical trial to test an antiviral drug produced by Gilead, they have to have at least 700 people to do it. So it's hard to get the right people to go into the trials. There's the concern that the researchers will go to great efforts to begin these clinical trials to see the efforts dwindle after the outbreak ends, because the outbreak will probably end once the Northern Hemisphere heads into spring and into summer. It'll probably get a lot better. And so they hope that they can get this under control, and it depends on how persistent this virus winds up being. So, so I'm going to once again offer some advice, and I want to make clear that I cannot guarantee that the things I'm going to tell you are going to absolutely protect you from the coronavirus. But, when we talk about natural medicine and fighting viruses, fighting respiratory viruses, you fight them all pretty much the same way, because, you stimulate the part of your immune system that goes after the viruses, and you use herbs that help with killing viruses, and then other herbs that help to strengthen your respiratory system, and that's what you do. So I just want to remind you once again, washing your hands, washing your nose, washing your throat is really, really important. So when you wash your hands, you want to scrub really well. And you want to scrub for now, at least 25 seconds. So now I used to tell people sing happy birthday or recite the alphabet, and that's how long you should do it at a moderate pace. Now do it twice. So go happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. Go through the whole thing and do it twice and scrub really hard. And just so you know that the scrubbing motion that you do, whether using hand sanitizer or soap and water, that scrubbing motion is the most important thing that you do, because as you scrub, you are scrubbing off extraneous skin cells and you're scrubbing the virus off of your hands. So scrub, scrub, scrub. Your nose, it depends on what your comfort level is around cleaning your nose. Some people, when I say use a neti pot, they say they feel like they're drowning. And if that's you, I've got other solutions for you. Solutions, see what I did there? Anyway, neti pots are a really good idea. If you're willing to do a neti pot, it's a great idea, because the neti pot causes flushing. And so if you put a teaspoon of sea salt, I wouldn't do a whole teaspoon, half a teaspoon of sea salt, and I would use just plain sea salt. It works just fine. It doesn't have to be pink salt. In fact, it probably shouldn't be, because the pink salt doesn't dissolve very well. Having said that, when that's all I have in the house, that's what I use, and it works fine. It's just that when the solution comes out of your nose, you're going to see little pink and dark specks coming out, and that's fine. But if you want it all to dissolve, just use plain white sea salt. And about a half a teaspoon per cup, and by cup I mean 8 ounces, in your neti pot. And then make sure when you're using your neti pot that you really bend far forward. If you stand up straight or you don't bend far enough forward, the solution will go backwards and you will feel like you're drowning. If you want it to just come into the front part of your nose and to go in one side and out the other, you really have to be bent over double over the sink, or bent at the waist so that you're at least at a 90-degree angle, if not more. And I find when I do that, I do just fine. And the neti pot is going to give you good flushing. I think it's a good idea, if you're using a neti pot, to also use a nasal spray. Because once you do the neti pot, now you flushed, but you want something to reside inside the nose to fight infections. And so that's where I like my nasal sprays. I like one that has xylitol, grapefruit seed extract, and sea salt in it. Plain sea salt can be helpful, although at this point I would probably put something that has something in addition to the sea salt. I have another nasal spray that has essential oils in it that are antimicrobial, along with erythritol, xylitol, and sea salt. That can be very good, and you just use that as a nasal spray. And you spray in each nostril and you snort it. So you can use that on its own. What I recommend is that you first blow your nose, and then you do your spray, because you don't want to put extra fluid into your nose when there's already fluid in there. So don't forget to blow your nose first. And if it's possible, do the neti pot, and when you're done the neti pot, blow your nose and then do a nasal spray as well, and that'll give you protection as you go about your day. And it's a good idea to do these things when you get up in the morning, so you're starting fresh and so that you're instilling some antimicrobial stuff into your nose first part of the day, and so that you're somewhat protected during the course of the day. And then at the end of the day, after you've been out and about, you want to do it again. Do your neti pot and spray your nose again, and then you'll get some good antimicrobial coverage, because when you're out and about, you might have picked up the virus. When you're cleaning your nose and your throat, usually if you do that regularly, there's about a 48-hour window from when you were exposed, from exposure to when you actually get sick. So if you are hitting your nose and your throat every 12 hours, you're probably going to be okay. The third thing is to make sure that you gargle, because the viruses collect in the back of your nose, they collect in the back of your throat. So gargling is very important, and you can gargle with just salt water. You can gargle with salt water and a drop of tea tree oil. You can gargle with salt water, tea tree oil. You can get an herbal mouthwash that has tea tree oil and other antimicrobial essential oils in it. So you swish it in your mouth, and then you take it to your throat, and you just lean your head back and do that gargling motion, and that'll agitate the fluid in the back of your throat, and it'll clean your tonsils, and then it'll clean the microorganisms off the back of your throat. If you want to go really nuts and get some even more protection, you can drink green tea. Drinking green tea, when you put green tea in your mouth, green tea has wonderful immune properties. So as it's in your mouth and going in the back of your throat, it's going to fight illness. And the other thing that you can do is probiotics, but ingest a probiotic substance where you can rinse and gargle and eat and hold the stuff in your mouth. So which probiotic substance you use is kind of up to you. And if you are not dairy intolerant, I am a big fan of kefir, because kefir has a lot of microorganisms that are helpful, and those microorganisms help your immune system. So when you're drinking your kefir, hold it in your mouth, and you might even gargle with it a little bit before it goes down. Maybe do a couple of swallows. I mean, not fun to gargle kefir, but if you did a couple of swallows where you gargled it, you're going to get some microorganisms residing in your mouth and your throat that are going to fight illness for you. You can do that with kefir. You can do it with yogurt. Yogurt doesn't have as many microorganisms as kefir. That's why, if you notice, kefir tastes more pungent than yogurt, because it just has so many more microorganisms in it, and they all impart various flavors. There's going to be more lactic acid in the kefir. That's why it tastes more sour, and there's going to be more byproducts of the, organic acids as a result of the fermentation that goes on. But you're going to get more bang for your buck out of the kefir. And so if you're dairy intolerant, then you can get water kefir. There are brands you can get at the store. You can make it yourself. And so usually it's fermented coconut water, and then it'll have other things in it. It'll be flavored. You can get mango flavor and strawberry flavor and different flavors at the store. But that's something else that you can sip on, and you can gargle in the back of your throat. You can also eat other fermented things. You can eat organic sauerkraut. You can get jars of fermented vegetables at the health food store. I have some ginger carrot sitting in the fridge waiting for me to crack into it. And you get probiotics that way. So the probiotics are protective. I can't say enough about elderberry. Elderberry is known to fight and kill the flu. The other thing I have to remind you is everybody's getting really worried about the coronavirus. You should be more worried about the flu, because the flu is much easier to catch than the coronavirus.
And it kills a lot of people.
Right.
It really does.
The incidence of death from influenza is much higher than from this coronavirus. So you should be more concerned about that. But I guess it's kind of the devil, Most people who get the flu do not die, which is why the flu persists. You don't know if that's going to be you. And, you would do well to just protect your immune system and do really good things for your immune system. So taking a little bit of elderberry syrup every day is not a bad idea. having good vitamin A on board, whether you take it in a supplement or you eat it in your food, is going to be helpful. Vitamin C, if you can take it, that's a good idea. You can take it as a supplement. Once again, you can eat it in your food, in your Brussels sprouts and broccoli and strawberries and peppers. And leafy greens in general are all going to have vitamin C in them. And then you can get immune compounds that have various herbs in them. They can be herbs that are that help the immune system, and they can also be herbs that help the lungs. And I would say this time of year you want to do stuff that helps the lungs. So for immune herbs, OSHA, which is Ligusticum porteri, and Echinacea, of course, and Eleuthero, those are all great immune tonic herbs. And then lung tonic herbs, Yerba Santa, Elecampane, Mullein, Wild Cherry, these are all great. And Ivy, those are all good tonic herbs for the lungs.
We had a caller call in about juniper also being a possibility. I don't know if that's anything that...
Juniper tincture or essential oil or...
Eucalyptus juniper steam for respiratory infections.
Sure.
Juniper berries and tinctures, yep. Different things like that.
Okay. I think of juniper as a kidney tonic.
Oh.
But, you know, I'm sure that it has a lot of volatile oils in it. And it is going to, you know, it's going to have some antimicrobial benefits. If one of the things you want to do is do a steam inhalation, those can be really nice because that's a way to get antimicrobial essential oils into your respiratory tract. So, you know, you put a pot on the stove and you boil water and then you turn the heater off. You never put your face over a boiling pot of water. And then you put a towel over your head and you breathe in the steam. And you can add essential oils to that to the pot so that you are getting the benefits of the essential oils. And they'll evaporate and then you'll breathe them in and you get antimicrobial benefits from it. By the way, you know, smudging your house where you take a bundle of sage and you burn it and you walk around your house with it to clear out energy and spirits and stuff. Well, guess what else it does when you burn sage? It kills bacteria and microorganisms. Who would have thought? Makes perfect sense. You've got something burning. When something is burning, it's going to kill microorganisms. And also, you're creating volatile essential oils again, because there are essential oils that are antimicrobial in sage. So when you burn it and you bring it around your house, those essential oils have the opportunity to kill off any airborne toxins. So that's another nice thing you could do. Also, if you vaporize essential oils that are antimicrobial, that's another way to go. So there you go. All right. So, with this coronavirus, chances are you're not going to catch it. Chances are greater that you're going to catch the flu, whether you've had a flu shot or not. What they say about getting the flu shot is that it's only 40. This one, the one this year, is only 45 to 55% effective, which means that, there's a 45 to 55% chance that it will protect you from getting the flu, which means that there is a 45 to 55% chance that it won't protect you at all, unfortunately. So it's a kind of a crapshoot. and the problem with the flu vaccine is that they can only estimate it. They have to go by what happened in Australia 6 months earlier. And flu viruses, all these viruses that cause respiratory illnesses mutate, and they mutate in people all the time, which is why every year you get a cough, you get a cold, you get this, that, the other, because these viruses, even though you have antibodies to viruses, the viruses mutate. They say that if you get the vaccination, that if you get the flu, you might not suffer with it as much because you do have some antibodies, but if they haven't hit the strain just right and you get a slightly different strain, the antibodies will be somewhat effective against it, which is why you won't get as sick. And it's up to you, of course, if you want to get a vaccination or not. Of course, there are going to be toxins in the vaccination like mercury and aluminum and squalene. And then you have to consider, do you want to keep getting that every year? So, and the thing is, if you get the flu vaccine, you're not off the hook because it's only 45 to 55% effective. So you could still get the flu even if you get a flu shot. So you have to do all the things I just told you. I mean, it's a good idea to tell you what to do, but the things I just told you, all the things that you do for immunity. The other things would be eating really well, eating your fruits and vegetables, not eating too much sugar, not eating foods that cause inflammation. By the way, if you eat a food that regularly gives you an upset stomach, you should stop. Why? Because when you get an upset stomach from eating the food, it's telling you that you're getting inflammation from that food.
It seems
If you have inflammation in your body, you will not be able to fight infections as well. So if you eat a food that you love and every time you eat it, you don't feel good, it's a good idea not to do that. Doctor, when I do this, it hurts, so don't do that.
So don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah. So, All right. So let's talk about something else besides the coronavirus. Here is a story, New Interesting Foods for 2020. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. And one of the foods that there's just really, really interesting foods. Avocado toast is so last year. We don't eat avocado toast.
Haven't gone into that yet.
No, and we don't even always eat avocados. Just because we don't grab them for no good reason.
Right.
There's interesting sweetener changes. So you can get syrup made from weird things instead of just sugar. So you know how you can get agave syrup. That was a next thing that you could get to sweeten your foods. You can do maple syrup and maple syrup and honey. Of course, they're still sweet. And if you do too much of them, they could have immune issues. But they have flavonoids in them that are antimicrobial and they do have nutrition in them. There's studies on both maple syrup and honey as for exercise support. You know how we eat those gels like goos and things like that, that maple syrup and honey are supposed to work just as well as those things, at least as well as those things, that if you took a shot of honey or maple syrup on your bike ride, it would help your bike ride. And in fact, when we go to the farm to Fork Fondo, if we stop at a farm that produces maple syrup, they give us maple syrup shots. And they're great. And, you know, you're 30, 40 miles into a 80-mile bike ride. Those are good. Those are great. So there's other syrups that are popular. I'm going to name three. So full calorie sweeteners. There's a date syrup that you can get. So it's syrup that's made from dates. They do have the same calories as sugar, but they do have a fruitier taste. They're not a swap, but it gives your baked goods a more complex taste. And if you like the taste of it, you might be inclined to use less. You can get syrup made from pomegranate as well. So again, it's going to still be the same number of calories, but it just gives it a more interesting taste. I love the way dates taste. They have just an interesting sweet and nutty taste to them. Mm. And I like, you know, date treats, and I just like to eat dates. And pomegranates are great too. Pomegranates are wonderful because they have ellagic acid in them, which is wonderful and strengthening to your blood vessels, and it helps to lower cholesterol and helps with your cardiovascular health. Good stuff. Okay. And then there's the low-calorie sweeteners. So a couple of them we've talked about in the past. One of them is monk fruit, also known as lohanguo, and it is non-caloric, and you can get monk fruit in the grocery store in your regular supermarket now. It's called that because it was named after Buddhist monks who grew it hundreds of years ago. It's available as powders and liquids. And it's non-caloric, and it helps you regulate your blood sugar. It's actually good for you. So if you like the way it tastes, you know, you can get some and try it and put it in. See if you can get away with using it and not use anything else to sweeten whatever it is you're drinking. It actually will help you regulate your blood sugar. Erythritol, we've talked about in the past. So erythritol, it's a sugar alcohol. It's found in some fruits and fermented foods, and it has 90% fewer calories than white sugar. You can get bags of it at the store. It tastes pretty good. And, it does have some calories in it, but it has far fewer calories than regular sugar. And so you'll see drinks sweetened with it. And you can buy the powder and bake with it if you want to. And people who are doing ketogenic diets or low-carb diets are using it to sweeten things. Then there's the one that's really interesting to me. And that's allulose. I hadn't heard of it before, and I grabbed the syrup. I also have some ice cream that has no caloric sweeteners in it, but it does have allulose in it, and I'm happy to report that my digestive system did just fine with it. Yay. It's allulose, also known as cycose. And cycose is spelled P-S-I-C-O-S-E. And it's a rare sugar, so it's not the cheapest. You know, when you buy a little bottle of it, it's not so cheap. But it's interesting. It's found in only a few foods. It's in jackfruit. It happens to be in figs. And figs are one of my favorite treats. I didn't realize there's allulose in figs. I have like a fig a day. If you eat a lot of figs, you could get into a situation. But I keep Turkish figs in my desk, dried figs, and I have probably one a day.
What kind of situation?
A sugar situation. You know, it's a lot of sugar and calories and stuff. And it's easy to munch on them because they're, but figs are very sweet. But if you have one, you're going to get the fiber. The nice thing about figs is they are sweet and they do have calories in them, but they have lots of little seeds in them. And if you don't mind the seeds are good for you. You're going to get some essential fatty acids and fiber from those seeds. And those seeds are going to help to slow down the sugar absorption as you're consuming them. I am a fig fan, and figs are fun. Whether I like, and I like all kinds of figs. I like to say the word fig.
I know you. I was going to say there's, and then there's the word.
Yes, fig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
and
a fun word
and
to
you,
say.
You think fig is funny?
Funny, yeah. But Turkish figs, dried Turkish figs are lovely, and then mission figs. They're little and cute and dark, and those are very delicious too. And then when they're in season, it's fun to find the find them fresh, and they go very nicely. They can go on a salad, and they do lovely. They're lovely with goat cheese. They're lovely with like soft, pungent cheeses like goat cheese and sheep cheese and probably other cheeses too. But those nice spreadable cheeses, they're very nice. But Chèvre, they're lovely. And the fresh figs. There's allulose in raisins as well. And allulose is similar to erythritol in that it's about 90% fewer calories than white sugar. And it's the composition is similar to sugar. So the name allulose, the al in allulose means other. So it basically means other sugar. So it's the same. It may be the same empirical formula, but the components are rearranged in the molecule so the body doesn't absorb the calories in that form. And so you can buy allulose syrup at the store, and it is non-GMO, gluten-free, and vegan because this is made from fruit. So it's very interesting. So you have to figure out if you like the way it tastes. There is a brand of ice cream out there that has no caloric sweeteners in it, and it is sweetened with allulose. That's one of the sweeteners, and I think it's allulose and erythritol. And I find that the ice cream tastes pretty good. I mean, it's not the same as eating ice cream with regular sugar, but it's not bad. It's really not bad. And so you can find that ice cream that's sweetened with the allulose. It's a low-calorie ice cream, and you can find it in the grocery store. Okay, and there's one that's not listed on this source that I'm reading from, but it's hickory nut syrup. I found some at the farmer's market in Basra. A young woman was selling it, and I bought it, and I really liked it. It was very good because hickory nuts have a sweet, nutty flavor, and the syrup was great. I went through the whole bottle. It's gone. You know, I just, so I'm going to have to go back to the Basra farmer's market whenever it starts up again or find a way, find it somewhere else. I don't know. Okay, so now there are crazy nut butters. These are interesting. So there's a brand that makes these weird nut butters. One of them is roasted watermelon seed butter. So that's really interesting. And then there's also pumpkin seed butter, which I've seen before. But watermelon seed butter, that was a new one on me. I saw it somebody was giving out samples at Whole Foods, and I tried it, and it was pretty good. And it's made from the soft material inside the hard shells of the seeds. It's a little thinner than other nut butters. And they have, so that's something you can try. So the watermelon seed butter is going to have some essential fatty acids for you. It's going to have probably some omega-6s, some gamma-linolenic acid and alpha-linolenic acid for you. Just an interesting thing to try. And it's, you know, you get an alternative. When you eat different foods, you get more variety of nutrition. So that's a nice thing. All right. Then there's rainbow potatoes. And so you can get potatoes in all different colors. And I do like to recommend dark colored potatoes because it's in the family of purple produce. Things that are purple have anthocyanins. The other thing is that Brian has taught us is that when plants express intensities, so when plants express intensities, they're really at a high level of evolution. That means the plant is very healthy, and that the plant was very able to express in a great way things that it didn't necessarily need to express to survive. So if you get a pepper that's very spicy, that's a high level of expression. If you get a radish that's very spicy, that's a high level of expression. So the spicier your radish, the spicier your arugula, the plant doesn't need to make that compound for it to survive. So if it's really happy and thriving and it's growing in a really great organic environment with lots of good compost and lots of good minerals and lots of variety of microorganisms, it's going to have a high level of expression of some of these components. So one example is the spiciness of your radishes. Another example is these interesting colors in these potatoes. A white potato isn't at as high a level of expression as a purple potato. And the darker the potato, the more anthocyanins it has in it. And those are wonderful antioxidants. So if you're concerned about eating potatoes because they're going to raise your blood sugar, I would submit that your blue or purple potatoes are going to raise your blood sugar less because of the anthocyanins. Anthocyanins are known to help to regulate your blood sugar. So you can get, so looking for those blue and purple potatoes, they're lovely and they're usually small and they're usually sweet and they're very nice. You can get dark sweet potatoes too, sweet potatoes and ruby and purple as well. That's a great idea because sweet potatoes in general, they have more fiber and they have more, that of course they have beta carotene in them and they're better for your blood sugar than white potatoes. So if you can find purple sweet potatoes, that's awesome. All right. And so here's another one, which is blended meats. They're meats that have veggies added to it. So you'll have beef and mushroom combinations, meat and vegetable sausage, chicken and vegetable combinations. So so they'll be, you know, meat things like sausages and ground beef and other prepared meats that have veggies in them. Which you could do yourself, but you know, it's nice. If you want something that's quick and convenient, you can get those. I mean, we get sausages that have stuff in them. You know, we'll get kale, Asiago sausages and things like that.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're just fine. But that's nice. And then oats is the new dairy. Remember yesterday we were looking at, we were talking about oat milk.
Yeah, that's, I guess I'll have to try it before I give my opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
So
doesn't sound right. To begin
so what?
With,
what we'll do is we'll grab some and we'll try it this week and we'll report back on it next week. And we could try the oat ice cream too if I can find it. Yeah, I tried it last year and it was all right.
You didn't really like it though.
It was
did you?
It was a little grainy. I find that if you're going to do a non-dairy ice cream, I think my favorite is cashew. One of the brands does a really nice job with cashew, and my second favorite is coconut. And it depends on the flavor of the ice cream, which because I've had amazing flavors of cashew based ice cream and amazing flavors of coconut based ice cream, and I think it depends on the flavor how good they were. But they're both really good, and the reason they're really good is because cashew and coconut are fatty. So anything that has fat in it is going to bring forward the lovely flavors that are in your ice cream. So oats. So yeah, I tried the oat ice. I'm going to give it another shot though. I'm going to grab some oat ice cream and we're going to try it. We can't go wrong. It's non-dairy. You know, it's reasonably healthy. So we'll try it, and we'll try the oat milk as well. And there's that brand Nut Pods, and we have to try those too. Yeah, and we'll report back on those. And they're creamers that are made from nuts. So we'll try them and we'll report back on them. That would be really nice. So there are numerous brands of the oat milk, and they're reported to be creamy and people like to put them in their coffee and they think they're just fine. So we'll try it and we'll see. But I thought that would be interesting So there's some interesting, unusual new foods for you to try if you want to. Watermelon butter, oat milk, purple potatoes, and allulose. That's an interesting allulose and also hickory nut syrup. By the way, hickory nut syrup is not, I reported the hickory nut syrup, well, the hickory nut syrup should have been reported with the caloric sweeteners. That's a caloric, that should have been reported with the date syrup and the pomegranate syrup. It is not a low calorie sweetener. You know, it's just like, you know, if you've got agave syrup or something, or pomegranate or date syrup. All right. So anyway, yeah, here I'm seeing a brand that's citrus kale and chicken sausages. That looks really good. That looks really nice. Okay. So what else do we, so what else do I have for you? So because I wasn't here, I think the week before Valentine's Day, we had so much to talk about that we didn't talk about, you know, usual Valentine's Day stuff. And then the Wednesday before Valentine's Day, I was out sick. So we didn't get to talk about, Valentine's Day stuff. And now it's already the 26th, and we had more to talk about last week. So we didn't talk about it then either, because I was reporting on some things that some questions that had come in. So one of the things that might be interesting to you, a good Valentine's Day story, is what you might not realize is that Ron and I consider our anniversary to be Valentine's Day.
Yay. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. So maybe you would like to hear the story of how Ron and I met.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
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 Okay. So how do we meet?
You showed up at my house with chocolate on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, but before that.
Oh, before that?
Yeah.
Oh, that whole story? That whole story. Okay. So anyway, I, over the years, have been both an avid cyclist and runner, and I had these runs that were leaving from my house on Saturday mornings, and I had a lot of people that would show up to them, and one of my friends was he was actually a patient of yours, and so he would...
So you can't say his name.
I'm not saying his name. So anyway, he was a patient of yours, and we both were avid listeners of the Radio Naturopath because I was just fascinated by the whole thing, and I would listen to it for as much time as I could get it on my radio before I'd get out of range as I was driving out of town because, you know, heading off to work. So we would often talk about, you know, the last episode, what you talked about, that sort of thing, and how much we appreciated the amount of information you're putting out. Now, get this. I'd listened to you for probably 3 years before I met you.
Well, Radio Naturopath started... I started here at WHUS in 2002.
Okay.
So it was only... So it was not quite... Yeah. Yeah, so it could have been 3 years.
About 3 years.
So that means you were listening from the very beginning.
So, yeah. Probably true. Probably true.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've always been a WHUS fan.
Right.
You know, I've listened to a lot of things on WHUS.
Yeah.
So anyway, we are talking about it, and I said to him, "Yeah, I'd like to meet her someday. She sounds really interesting. I'd like to really meet her someday." And he said to me,
"And you thought I was 25?"
Yeah. Well, you sound young on the radio.
Huh.
And you are young.
I'm youngish.
You're younger than me.
I'm younger than you, but I'm not so young.
Yeah, but no. You're younger than me.
All right.
So you're still young.
Okay.
So anyway, I said something about wanting to meet you someday, and he said to me, because he was also taking my spin class due to being a runner and always injured, so he was taking my spin class, and he said, "Well, she takes your spin class." And I went, "She does?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Which one is she?" And he said, "She's the short girl with curly hair that talks all the time."
and hoots and hollers.
I went, "That's Fran Storch?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "I'll introduce myself." So I introduced myself.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. So we would chat. We would chat after class. And then I was interested in, you know, I was taking spin classes because that was the year. That was 2004. And that whole year, I had been riding my bike, and I'd been riding my ancient...
you became a born-again cyclist.
Yes.
Right.
And I had been riding my Schwinn Varsity mm-hmm. Sport from 1987 and frightened on it. And it, because when I would descend on it, it would vibrate down, going down hills. It was really, it was a death trap at that point. And the brakes didn't work, and nobody seemed to know how to fix the brakes, which is very strange. And
was strange.
So I was riding and riding and riding, and then it got really cold, and I was willing to ride when it was cold, but my hands got so cold that I didn't think I could do it. And I'm like, but I'm really into riding my bike. What am I going to do in the winter? And somebody told me, why don't you go to Super Future Fitness? They have spin classes. I'm like, okay. So I went, and I took Pam Miella's class, and that was my first spin class with Pam Miella, and she was very nice, and she was a good teacher. And so I took her class, and then I wound up meeting Ron, and he was in the, I thought he looked geeky because he was all wearing bike gear, and I was one of those people I'd never seen.
I do that.
I never saw bike gear before, and I thought he looked really geeky, and I thought he had really long arms.
That's an important part.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Anyway, so then I became interested in buying another bike, and I wanted him to help me with that. And so he set up, back then spinning was really popular, and he set up a spin class for 8 o'clock at night on Thursdays, which was crazy. His idea was that there would be a spin class and then we'd all go to the pub for a pint afterwards.
Yeah.
And
it's a nice idea.
Right. So I went to his spin. I must not have been as busy at my practice as I used to be. I must not have had as much paperwork because I was able to go to that class, and I went to the class. And the first time he did it, it was me and a couple other people, but only he and I wanted to go out afterwards. And I had all my books and catalogs with me trying to figure out what bike I was going to buy. And so I was going to pick his brain. And so just me and him went, and it turned into a date.
I guess it did.
It did turn into a date.
Yeah, it did turn into a date.
And then the next week we went out again, and it turned into a date more. And then we wound up buying the bicycle. And I had to put some things in order in my life before I could actually date him. And then once I did that, then we got together. So that's how we met. So actually, one of the things that happened, as you said, it was Valentine's, because the chocolate festival happened within that time period. Mm-hmm. And the chocolate festival was Saturday the 12th, and Valentine's Day was Monday the 14th, and that was the year 2005. And so I'd gotten some chocolatey things at the chocolate festival, so I did. I showed, as you said, I showed up at your house with chocolate, which touched his heart because he's a big fan of the chocolate. And we sat, we hung around, and we talked and stuff. And he couldn't stay because he had to go pick up Greg, who was in the robotics class.
I'm also a big fan of the Fran.
Yeah, and then I
there.
Left. Yeah, right. So right. Then I left and had. And then, you know, so things didn't get underway for a couple of weeks. But that event, me going to your house with the chocolate, that sealed the deal.
That was the beginning of the, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because a woman who brings chocolate to you is always, that's a good thing.
It's a positive sign.
Yeah. So that's how we know. Right. So now you know. If you don't know. Now you know. And so let's just do, so in the spirit of Valentine's Day, we'll use our last few minutes to talk about, once again, why chocolate is good for you. And there's benefits to dark chocolate.
And your heart.
And your heart. So dark chocolate, if you buy chocolate with a high cocoa content, try to get it with at least 70% cocoa content. It has soluble fiber. It has a lot of minerals. It has flavanols, which help to regulate your blood sugar. And it has stearic acid. It has stearic acid in it, which is actually a fat that's good for you. It has a really good profile of the fatty acid profile of cocoa in dark chocolate is really good. It's mostly saturated, monounsaturated with some polyunsaturates. And the saturated fat that's in chocolate is good for you. It's not gonna hurt you. It's not gonna give you high cholesterol. In fact, cocoa is generally good for cardiovascular health. It does have some caffeine and theobromine, which is stimulating, but it doesn't have. Some people who are very sensitive to to methylxanthines, to caffeine and theobromine and things like that, will be kept awake and will find chocolate to be a stimulant. But a lot of people will eat it, and it's not going to keep you from going to sleep. But for some people, it will. So you have to be careful of that. I've had some people tell me that they're so sensitive to caffeine that they can't eat chocolate close to bedtime because they won't be able to sleep. So it is very high in antioxidants, and it has a high ORAC value. The ORAC value is, it stands for oxygen radical absorbance capacity. And so it has a great ability to fight oxidative stress. And unprocessed cocoa beans are the highest scoring that have been tested. So if you can get cocoa nibs or just, you know, roasted cocoa beans, that's really the best way to get the antioxidants. And you can use cocoa nibs in your food and your cooking. And if you mix it with fruit, if they're unsweetened, if you mix it with fruit, then they'll taste a little sweet and you'll get a chocolate rush. It may improve blood flow and lower blood pressure. So the flavanols in dark chocolate can stimulate the endothelium, the lining of the arteries, to produce nitric oxide. They're nitric oxide enhancers, so they can help lower your blood pressure. And there are actually supplements that for blood pressure, and that one of the compounds in it is cocoa flavanols. Nitric oxide sends signals to the arteries to relax, which lowers the resistance to blood flow and therefore reduces blood pressure. And there are a lot of studies that show that. So cocoa, regular cocoa content. So if you do unsweetened cocoa and cocoa nibs, it can help to lower your blood pressure. It also raises your HDL and protects LDL from oxidation. So that's a great thing. So LDL is really only a problem if it's oxidized. So when it's oxidized, that means that it's gotten some of the electrons taken away and it's running around your arteries, stealing electrons and causing damage. And dark chocolate can also improve insulin resistance. And so that's important for heart disease and diabetes. Also reduces heart disease risk. If it's going to raise HDL and reduce oxidized LDL and increase your nitric oxide and relax your blood vessels, it's going to improve your cardiovascular health. So you're going to be less likely reduce your risk of death from heart disease. So heart disease is going to be that it's probably going to reduce cerebrovascular disease as well. So it's going to prevent heart attacks and strokes. That if you eat chocolate two or more times per week, it lowers the risk of having calcified plaque in your arteries by 32%. And less frequently, it had no effect. So you have to eat two or more times a week. And more than five times a week lowers your risk of heart disease a lot. Also can protect your skin from the sun. The flavanols can protect against skin damage, improve blood flow to the skin, and increase skin density and hydration. And so have dark chocolate if you're going to go to the beach. And it can improve brain function. Well, of course it is, because it's going to improve cerebrovascular health. So it's going to protect, it's probably going to protect you from strokes as well. And so caffeine and theobromine help you to improve your brain function in the short term, and in the long term, because it's going to improve your cerebrovascular health, it's going to keep your arteries clear. So there's a lot of evidence that chocolate's really good for you, that it's a great antioxidant, lowers blood pressure because of nitric oxide. It helps the health of your arteries because it lowers oxidized LDL. You have to be careful what chocolate you buy. You want to find it with at least 70% or higher cocoa content. If you get pedestrian chocolate that has not a lot of cocoa content in it and has a lot of the cocoa, like the cocoa butter, replaced with poor quality oils, it's not going to be as good for you. So you have to go and get the premium quality chocolate and at least 70% or higher. If you get cocoa nibs or you find ways to cook with raw organic cocoa powder, that's going to also give you the antioxidant benefits. So there you go. So I'm going to go. So thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath this week. So it was nice to. So remember, you can go to the Know Your Farmer Fair, which is happening this Saturday, February 29th at the Wyndham Town Hall Auditorium from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. at 979 Main Street in Willimantic. No charge. There's a snow date Sunday, March 1st, but again, I don't think it's going to snow. So I may be showing up there because it does sound like a nice event. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.